Boy, I'm excited to be in Meriden, Kansas this morning. I'm also glad they got a clock back there for your benefit. I had to make a special request for that. I don't need glasses to see back there. I need glasses to see up here. But now, I don't know. I was thinking to myself, I think it was a pastor appreciation day gift. They got this huge clock that sits in the back of my church so I can see it. But you may need it this morning. I hope not. If you'll turn to Hebrews chapter 11. And I just really, not just with your Bible, but with your mind, I want you to think about that this morning. I'm excited to be in Meriden because I just realized a few days ago, it's been 20 years. My brother's been here, and for 20 years we've been having these conversations, and he'll talk about this thing or this thing. And, you know, Meriden, Kansas is a place, it just gives birth to stories. I mean, he'd be talking along there, and he'd be on some kind of project, or he's coming down or something. He's got to move something. He says, yeah, I got this trailer. Now, usually the guy uses it to move his ostriches. And he just goes on. I said, wait. There's a story there, isn't there? And one of my favorite, he probably told you this, but I'll abbreviate, I don't know how much he want told, but he was sitting at a board meeting, not at a church board meeting, but an organization. He was sitting between two mega church pastors that were building buildings, about the time you guys are building your building, and they were throwing back and forth all these stats, and they were in a large metropolitan area, and one was saying, we had to stop, we couldn't borrow any more than $25 million. The other one said, yeah, we borrowed $28 million, and he's sitting there listening and saying, we think we can get away with it because we have somebody who's on staff at the mayor's office, and they're in this major city, and he's sitting there, and he's thinking to himself, if I could, I would say, we're building a church, and we're not borrowing any millions. And furthermore, when I need a favor from the mayor, I just go talk to him while he's fixing my car. There's a story, you know? There's a story there. And I want to talk about that this morning. I'm indebted to a guy named Don Miller. I don't know if you've read any of the things that Don Miller has written, but he's written several books, and he had a big selling book that was called Blue Like Jazz, and it was really not a memoir of his life, but it was bits and pieces put together, and it was so successful after some of the other books weren't that they decided to write to make a movie. Somebody decided to make a movie. He didn't know how good of an idea that was. In fact, they came and talked to him about it. He said, I don't really know, guys. Then he said, then they told me how much they would pay me, and I said, I think I'll get right on that. And so he was responsible for helping them translate this book into a screenplay or a movie script. And so he began to spend a lot of time learning what makes a good story, even though he'd written books. What he found out was this. He could write a good story, but he wasn't living a good story. He could sit in his office and write a good story, but his life did not contain the elements of a good story. Now, if I think of good stories, I look at the book of Hebrews. And I'm not probably going to read a whole lot out of chapter 11, but if you're not familiar with chapter 11, I want to encourage you to go back and read it this afternoon because there are some stories. If you're graduating from high school, now would be a good time to think about what kind of story you're going to write. If you're graduating from eighth grade, now would be a good time to think about what kind of story you're going to write. Or if you're ready for your high school reunion this year. This is painful for me to think about that. Not because I have a high school reunion, but my daughter's 10-year high school reunion is this summer. The only time it hurt worse than that realization was when the optometrist flipped that little thing over about 10 years ago and the near sight part, you know, up close, and he flipped it, and it looked better with the lens. I knew it was no longer a myth. I really am deteriorating. It really doesn't matter where you're at in life. I want you to think about the kind of story that your life is, that your life is writing. There are four choices that I want to look at. There are a lot of choices. I said at four, actually three. I'm going to narrow it down to three and try to be quick. Three choices that I want you to think about. There are a lot of it, three very important ones. The first is, I've got to choose whether I'm going to be an author or a victim. I want you to back up from chapter 11, the few verses, to chapter 10, verse 35. Therefore, do not throw away your confidence, which has a great reward. For you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what was promised. For yet in a very little while, he who is coming will come and will not delay. But my righteous one shall live by faith. And if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. But we are not of those who shrink back to destruction. I want to make sure you got that part. We are not of those who shrink back to destruction, but we're of those who have faith to the preserving of the soul. And that is what introduces chapter 11 that has all those wonderful stories of faith. You've got to decide whether you're going to be a victim of your circumstances, a victim of things that happen to you, or if you're going to author your story, if you're going to decide what happens, or whether circumstances are going to tell you what happens. What do you do with the things that happen to you? What are you doing with your life? I was thinking about this, and I was thinking about that term that kids use. I guess kids, I never used it. I never used that term. I didn't ask to be born. One of the reasons I never used it, I think, is because I could just hear my dad saying, "It's a good thing." I'd have said no. I didn't ask to be born. I didn't ask for all. No, but you have a choice. Life is not fair. In fact, this world is broken. People in it are broken. It's not going the way it's supposed to go. And I feel like I have to say that these days because that is the essential tenet of Christianity. That's where the Bible starts, with the fact that the world is not the way it was made to be. I got a kind of an email with this PowerPoint thing throwing through. It's this beautiful presentation from a brother of a friend of mine. So it was a liberation theology guy who was interviewing the Dalai Lama. But the end of it, he says essentially what the Beatles said. I'm sure they got it from the Dalai Lama. The last song they ever recorded together. Anybody know what that song was? See, I know you're all spiritual. Either that or you're too young. The whole song is this. In the end, the love you take is equal to the love you make. That's the Dalai Lama. That's the idea of karma. I got to warn you, I don't care what age you are, if you got chapped lips, Carmex will work. But if you're dealing with life, karma won't. It doesn't come around fair. It doesn't come around right. And if you get hung up on that idea that I'm supposed to get what's coming to me, you'll end up living your life as a victim. You will shrink back to destruction. We're not of those who believe that life is supposed to be fair. We're of those who believe in the endurance, the preserving of the soul by faith, by living that way. I got to choose. How am I going to live this life?
I live in a broken world. We've been looking on Wednesday nights in a men's group at our church at addictive behaviors. It's very interesting. But essentially, addictions are generally an expression of a way to numb pain. There's a lot of ways we do this. And I talk to you if you graduated from eighth grade, if you graduated from high school. You're going to have pain. The world is broken. One way that people cope with the pain, the way they deal with it, is to go into addictive behaviors. Alcohol is one of those things. Drugs. It changes the chemical makeup of your brain so you don't feel the way you feel about the pain. It numbs. Alcohol, drugs, pornography, other kind of sexual addictions. They change the way your brain, because there's an adrenaline that they affect. Not just alcohol and drugs. Work can change the way your brain experiences things. Can give you an adrenaline rush. People are addicted to those things that are not socially acceptable, and sometimes people are addicted to other things that are. And when you have a headache, it's okay to take an aspirin. But if you got a pain that won't go away and you live your life in that habitual behavior because you feel better, you're not dealing with the pain. Another addiction. I just Wednesday night we talked about this, and I was shocked because I had it was the guy who's teaching this, who's been a psychologist for about 40 years. He said we can be addicted to anger because when we get angry, there is this adrenaline rush, and so when pain comes about, we respond with anger, and it makes us feel better, and it also helps us avoid whatever it is that was hurting us. Got a neighbor who has I guess they call them portable building. I don't know if his is portable or not, but I refer to that as a shed. It's a nice shed. I mean, it's a nice building. It's an outbuilding. Maybe, I don't know. I always think of outhouse because I'm that old when I say outbuilding. But I shouldn't say what it is because there's a sign above the door. Now, you can't read the sign from my backyard or from the back window of my house. And I'm not going to mention who did this because I wouldn't want to tell on my mom. But there was a person. There was a person staying at my house who wondered what that sign said, and they got binoculars out. To read that sign. And I don't know, that it sounds like something somebody who spent a lot of time in a small town would do. I don't know. But the sign says, Ken's Pouting Shed. And so this person, after reading that sign, went and asked Ken's wife, whose name is Barbara. I live next door to Ken and Barbie. It's the truth. You know, it's a Springfield thing. Everything's perfect in Springfield. Yeah. And that's what Barbara said. She said, yeah, when Ken gets mad, he just goes out there and works. And like I said, it's okay when you got a headache to take an aspirin. But it really is American to do something that makes us feel good so that we don't have to deal with the pain. And work can be one of those things. Anger can be one of those things. I listened to him talk about anger Wednesday night, and I listened to him quote somebody, with the exception of one word in the sentence, quote somebody who I could see exactly how they were dealing with the situation and destroying people who had poured, or relationships of people who had poured into their lives because They dealt with pain through anger. That was their coping mechanism. Are we going to let the thing, the pain, define us and drive us to these kind of things? Or are we going to act in faith? I'm not talking about denial. I'm not talking about saying, I'm okay, I'm not hurting. No. What I'm saying is this. I acknowledge I am hurting. This world's broken. I do hurt. But I am not going to let those things define my life and what I do. I'm not going to live according to the pain. I'm not going to live according to what the circumstances dictate. There is something bigger. I can grieve. I can hurt. I can recover. But I am not going to let those things define the life that I live. My story is not going to be the story of a victim. I'm going to write it, and I'm going to write it differently. In fact, I'm going to be a co-author. If you go through Hebrews 11, you've seen where it leads up to. If you get to the end, chapter 12 begins this way, if I can turn over that far. Therefore, since we have such a great cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and the perfecter, King James says, the finisher. The author and the perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. I'm going to decide not only whether I'm going to author my story, but whether I'm going to try to do it my way, or whether I'm going to believe that God has a story laid out for my life. God has a path and a direction that He wants to take my life, and that my objective in writing the story is to follow and walk in the path that He has set for me. This weekend I listened to a song from I guess when I was a very young man or a teenager, sometime along that line, I never had listened to the words before. It's Billy Joel. And when I listened to this thing, I realized this thing just probably embodies his message more than in all the songs, and it was, my life. I don't need you to care, this is my life. You got to decide whether you're going to try to live your life, and it's your life, and nobody has any business in it, or if God has something good, a good story for your life, and that the best story you could ever write is the story that He has for you. And that what really is going to be rewarding is in life, and what's really going to make your story a good story, is what God has prepared for those who love Him. So I got to choose whether I'm going to be an author or a victim. Second choice, and this is kind of a strange one, it probably sounds really strange when I say it, I got to decide whether I'm going to be writing fantasy or I'm going to be writing whimsy. Whimsy is a word that Don Miller quotes one of his friends using, and by that he means, am I going to write a story with my life that includes the belief that there is something, I'll use this word, I hope it doesn't offend you, something magical going on? Am I going to live my life believing that everything is just as it seems, or am I going to believe that behind all this stuff, somebody is at work. Somebody is at work to do something. That God is at work in you to do and to will His good pleasure. Don't you like that word? Are you going to live a life where it's all on your shoulders and where you've got to do it and you've got to carry the load and I've got to make something of myself? Or are you going to live a life of whimsy, believing that God is all along the way, the ups, the downs, the good times, the bad times, God is in the picture and He's doing magical things. He is at work. He is at work in us. Is there whimsy? To do whimsy, to really see the magic, you got to have scenes. One of the things that makes a great story, Don says, is that it has scenes. Can you think about scenes in your life? Can you think about where the magic took place? Now, there was this social networking system that came out a few years ago for college students. And then old geezers like me have almost taken it over. And what old geezers like me do on Facebook is they post pictures of magical scenes. They post pictures of times people were together and wonderful things were happening. And you know what? None of us have posted any pictures of us watching television. Or playing video games. You have to have a scene for the magic to happen. I grew up in a very, a very privileged childhood. I know your pastor hasn't shared this with you, that we were very privileged children among the elite. We didn't have any money, but we had people from magic places come all the time. They would come in, and on Sunday mornings they would share their vision and their mission, and then they would go to lunch, and there was people that had been to places I could never imagine. Magic places. And I miss some of the most exciting things I can remember are people who are making an impact the other side of the world. I missed a whole lot of those because when it came time to go to lunch, I wanted to go watch football. And there was a fledgling hamburger chain that was just trying to get going. And I would talk my dad into dropping me by there where they had three choices, a hamburger, a cheeseburger, or a double cheeseburger. They had sold 200 million by that time. And I would get that, and I would go home. He would drop me at the house, and I would watch football while the magic people went to lunch. I might be able to tell you one or two plays of all those times they watched football. The scenes are not there. I'm not preaching against watching football. I'm really preaching. Probably I'm preaching against TV if I'm preaching against anything. There's a big difference between going to a game with your friends and sitting on the couch and watching one. It's a big difference between watching a TV show and going with friends to the theater. There's a big difference between sitting on the couch and having a scene where the magic can take place. I did go to one football game live. The first year that Busch Stadium in St. Louis opened. Not the one that's now, the one that they just tore down. December. Last game of the regular season, things were on the line between the Browns and the Cardinals, the St. Louis Cardinals. If you don't understand who the St. Louis Cardinals were, in the 60s, the St. Louis Cardinals were the Chiefs of the now. There are a lot of people who are addicts because of the St. Louis Cardinals. They were dealing with pain. I remember two or three things. I remember the pain of seeing my favorite player, Pat Fisher, get beat by Gary Collins on two or three times that game as the Cardinals lost. But that's about all I can tell you. But I can describe vividly going back to the car, going with my dad, getting in the car on that Saturday night. One time that year they didn't play on Sunday. Driving home in December. My dad was going to preach the next morning. I remember him rolling the window down so he could stay awake. Driving till I don't know what time in the morning. Because he created a scene. It created a scene for magic. 45 years later, I still can remember it like it was yesterday. There's magic going on. But you got to have a scene for it. See, you can decide whether you're going to write whimsy where you believe that God is at work and things can happen, or whether you're going to write fantasy where you escape to the television, where you escape to something else where you never get a scene where the magic can happen. Yesterday, I made an effort. I went to my wife's family reunion in Illinois, and she took her parents, and they were going to stay later, but I had to leave early enough to get back to this end of the state and beyond, so she didn't come with me today. She went back to Springfield after they got done last night, but I went there for a while because it's a magic place. Her reunions are like, it's like going to Hee Haw Live. Everybody there is funny. And the women are beautiful. You know. Some of you are not old enough to know what I'm talking about. I said Hee Haw. I drove back across the state and I kind of went out of my way a little bit to go to magic places. I went by my dad's hometown and to my grandma's house. You know what I realized? Because there's no house there. It's just ground there. And it matters. The place matters. But you know what I remember? It's not the house, it's the walk. The walk down the street, around the high school football field, and through the park, and back around. That scene was magic. And I left that town. I drove back this direction. Went by, didn't go over off the road and off the highway into it, but down the highway by my aunt's farm. Magic farm. She had magic cows. Black Angus, black magic cows. And we used to feed the magic cows by getting in the magic truck, the 50 Chevy pickup. And we'd fill it with magic corn. And we'd take it out and we'd feed the magic corn to the magic cows. Some of you just cannot believe I'm saying that. In fact, you think I'm an absolute idiot. Because you lost the magic. I'm here to tell you, it's okay. Because I lost the magic too. But you can get it back. And you don't have to wait till you're 50. Don't be drunk with wine. Wherein is excess, the King James says. See, the word there is a word that means escape from reality. You got to decide whether you're going to write whimsy or you're going to write fantasy. And the fantasy is when you're drunk with wine, or you're drunk with drugs, or you're drunk with pornography, or you're drunk with television, or you're drunk with work, or you're drunk with anger. Don't be drunk with these things where there's escape. But be filled with the Spirit. See, be filled with this reality that there's something at work besides this physical universe. There's something at work besides your schedule and your Palm Pilot and all those responsibilities. There's something at work there. Be filled with that reality. It's a whimsy. It's more than what you see, but it's reality. It's not escape. Are you going to write a fantasy? Are you going to write whimsy? Are you going to be drunk with wine or whatever? Or are you going to be filled with the reality of the Spirit? The other thing about fantasy, and I'll try to make this, but I think this is really important, is the church has often wrote a fantasy, a fairy tale, It's a story where you have characters like the wicked stepmother and Cinderella. See, in that story, the wicked stepmother is always wicked, and Cinderella is always wonderful. That's a fantasy. We created a world where we believe, and many times, and I've come to call this, and I'm not the originator of the phrase, but I call this a shame-based system, where we believe that bad people are bad, and these things happen to them, and there's this great gulf fixed between them, and there are good people who are good, and they always good, and good things always happen to them. And we would say, we don't believe that, but we get this system believes that this is the only way I'll ever act. This is the only thing that will ever happen to me if I'm one of these good people. And when we live a life of that fantasy, we live a life terrified that people might find out that we don't really belong here. That situation I'm talking about with anger, basically, that's what's going on. Somebody pushed a button, and anger came out because there was a fear that somebody might find out I'm really not perfect. Nonsense. We all make mistakes. Look what Paul says in Romans 3:23 that you used to use when you tried to witness. He doesn't say that to people out there who've never accepted Jesus. He's saying that to religious people. All have sinned and come short of the glory of God. What does the next verse say? Being justified by His grace. If we live this fantasy world, we keep trying to protect our vision, protect our image, our reputation, and we wanted people to believe that we really have never really failed, or if we did, it was long before we met Jesus. We live in fear. Love, perfect love, casts out all fear. I figured that out. It's not my love. It's the love of God. Can cast out all fear, because it's not that way. It's not that way. Going to live fantasy, or am I going to live whimsy? And with that, under that time, I might ask this. This might be offensive to you, but am I going to do a love story, or am I going to do a porno movie? What I'm saying is this. A porno movie is strictly about whatever makes me feel good, regardless of anybody else involved. There are people whose lives are about whatever pleasure they can experience. And I'm not even talking about those things we call sinful pleasure. It's about what in fact, in the paper in Springfield, I think Wednesday, they graduated the night before, and they quoted one of the graduates. Put it in the headlines. Now we can live for ourselves. Now maybe there was some misunderstanding in his diction, but at the core, if that's what you really think life is about, you're making a porno movie. You're making a movie about where all you're trying to do is get your own pleasure, and all you care about is yourself. And that's not worth looking at. That's not worth writing. That's not a good story. The story that's worth writing is a story, a love story. I finally figured this out. The last 5 years has kind of evolved, but I realized that when Jesus was asked what is the most important thing, and he answered his answer, he meant it. Y'all know what Jesus said was the most important thing? Absolutely. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. I won't preach the whole sermon, but when I finally figured out that what it means to be a disciple is to love God in those ways. And what I really began to see is there's a lot of people who love in a couple of ways and don't love the other ways. Because here's what I believe. I believe that when you love God with your heart, you love Him in your relationships. That the love of God shows through in the way you love His people. When you love Him with your soul, you love His life in you. You have a spiritual encounter with Him where He actually has to do some work in your spirit, so it's not about you anymore. When you love Him with your mind, obviously, you love His word, you love His truth. And when you love Him with your strength, you're involved in some kind of ministry, something that ministers and helps other people. Now see, when I talk about my story, that's what I want my story to be. I want to be a love story about how I loved God in those ways. I don't want to write or to live a porno movie. I want to live a love story. The things that are the greatest seen in my life are not those things that just directly brought me all the pleasure. The things that are really satisfying are those things, those times when I was able to love God and express my love to Him through something that I lived out. The last choice, and I'll make it really quick. The choice of writing a documentary or writing an epic. Let me ask you this. You're thinking about your life, what's your dream story? If you just graduated from high school, what's the dream that you have? You see, if I sat down, what would my dream life be? The question is, would anybody want to read that? See, if I was playing golf 4 days a week, do you think anybody would want to read that? I mean, I do go places no man has ever gone before. So what kind of story do you want to write? A documentary just covers what happened? And you can just go along and you think you live your life that way? Do you want that, or do you want an epic story? Because an epic story has adversity. An epic story is a story that involves a character who wants something and overcomes conflict to get it. What does James say in the opening verses of his letter? Count it joy, brothers, when you encounter all different kinds of trials. Count it joy. Do I want a story that's problem-free? Do I want my life to be free of problems? Do I just want to slide through? Or do I want to live the kind of story that I had to overcome some kind of obstacle, no matter what it was, to get what was important? You may have to think about that when finals come next winter. Do I want just a recounting of what happened, or do I want an epic story where I've overcome something? Don makes an interesting observation at the end of his book, and it's this. He grew up in Texas, and he remembered when Odessa, Texas, went to the state football championship. And they made a movie about that called Friday Night Lights. And when he heard about that, he decided he'd go see it. He hadn't paid a whole lot of attention before, but he decided he'd go see that movie, and he watched the movie, and at the end of the movie, they've been in the state championship. They're lined up for the winning touchdown. I haven't seen it, but according to Don, this is what happens. They're lined up to score the winning touchdown. The last play of the game, they hand the ball off, and the guy runs to the line, and he's stopped, and they lose the championship. Don said, that doesn't seem right. I watched that movie, and I remember when I was a kid, they won. They won the state championship. That little town in western Texas won the state championship in Texas. So he went back and he hunted back. And they did win the state championship the next year. But that wasn't the great story. See, you don't have to win for it to be a great story. What makes the great story is that you gave it your all. You sacrificed everything for what was set before you. That's an epic. That's an epic. What kind of story do you want to live with your life? What kind of story do you want to write? What do you want to do with the rest of it if there's not that much life left? What do you want to write? I want you to bow your heads for just a moment. And I want you to ask the Holy Spirit, what kind of life should I live? Perhaps he's been speaking to you through this sermon and you're realizing there's some changes. There's some changes in the way that you're living out the story. But what you want is that good story that he has for you. What you want is not sitting on the couch playing video games, but what you want is a scene where life is lived in his will. You're listening to the Holy Spirit. I'm going to ask you to do this. Just as you sense, there's something I can act on here. I'm not going to ask you to come forward, but I'm going to ask you just to stand where you're at. There's a direction I can take. There's a modification I can make. There's a place I could go with a story that I haven't gone yet. But I know God has this for me. And I'm deciding this is a story I want to live. As you listen to the Holy Spirit, and there's something you can do about this, would you just stand? Just right now.
Draw me close to you. Never let me go. I lay it all down again to hear you say that I'm your friend. You are my desire. No one else will do.